I'm Brittany Gallagher, reporting to you on digital culture for Digital Village. There's a lot of excitement in the world of biology, but biology and biotech startups are hard and expensive. You need a lab, you need equipment, and highly specialized knowledge. The barrier to entry is much higher than, say, building an app. My guest this week is Dr. Jun Aksup, scientific director and partner at IndieBio, who are working to change that and help scientists bring their research to market. I spoke with Jun about IndieBio, some amazing companies that have gone through the program. Think an external kidney, 3D printed organs, some trends we're seeing in biotech. But we start with what brought Jun to biology.
I started learning biology in high school and really got the opportunity to do hands-on biology through programs like Science Olympiad in high school. And that led me to a PhD in working with unnatural amino acids and synthetic biology, and also using that to create immuno-oncology drugs, so using T cells and bringing them to kill cancer. From that, I also was experiencing a lot of the startup boom, especially in the software and hardware space, and so I was really interested in entrepreneurship. Eventually worked at many startup companies in the Bay Area, also working in immuno-oncology and then CRISPR and automation. And then I ended up co-founding a company that went through IndieBio. And that's kind of been my connection with IndieBio. And now I am the scientific director and partner at IndieBio.
What is IndieBio and how does it work?
Yeah, IndieBio is a startup accelerator program, and we're devoted specifically to life sciences. But we're very agnostic around what this biology is able to do, and we end up capturing all fields of biology. And so at its core, IndieBio aims to turn scientists into entrepreneurs, and we try to impact the world by helping with planetary health and human health. So we're really looking to transform systems, and we think that biology, being something that can grow naturally and can scale naturally, and obviously something that it totally encompasses our world and our individual lives, that we think the biology has massive capabilities and technologies, just like how software and hardware has been transforming the world more recently. We kind of started IndieBio under challenging a couple of conventional wisdoms. First of all, that funding biology must be very expensive, that scientists aren't entrepreneurs, and that biology essentially is just therapeutics. And we've been able to challenge all of that, especially adapting the lean startup and entrepreneurship mindset to say, you don't have to build a gigantic company immediately. What if you just get a little bit of money to test your hypothesis? Can we make the grounds for a very successful company in the future? We think that scientists make great entrepreneurs, that they're already, you know, very knowledgeable, and they're very studious and resilient, and can learn very rapidly, that they themselves are oftentimes the ones who've worked with the technology for so long, and they should be also be the ones to take that and bring it to the world. And then now that we're seeing there are more tools available, we can stretch biology outside of what is traditionally thought as just therapeutics, diagnostics, and medical devices into areas like future food and consumer biotech and neurotechnology and even regenerative medicine and kind of stem cell research as well.
What does IndieBio provide to their scientist entrepreneurs?
So we actually provide $250K, and for that we take equity, and we provide both co-working space for office space and also laboratories. So we have molecular biology and cell biology labs. And so that's one of the biggest barriers to entry for biotech companies, is if you don't have a prototype and early results, then you're not going to be able to get funding. And if you don't have funding, then how are you going to get lab space and buy all the instruments and reagents that you need? So that's part of the real value of IndieBio, is that we provide all the infrastructure that you would need to really kick off your company. But in addition to the infrastructure, we also have a full program where we bring in experts from all different fields, mentors, we do panel discussions, and more importantly, too, we start building our network. So we've had 94 companies through our program so far, and they themselves are their own social network and community to really interchange all the knowledge that's happening around building biotech companies. And our program is 4 months, which is almost impossible to think about in the span of scientific research. But what we really challenge the companies to do is to figure out what is that minimal viable product? What is that de-risking moment, that de-risking data set that they would need in order to be attractive to the next round of investors? So it is definitely a huge crunch, and we challenge them in not thinking about doing science as not for science sake and curiosity's sake, but how do you build a product out of it, and how do you really test that product with customers? And so that iteration cycle, much like the lean startup and all kind of entrepreneurship ethos that you see in software and hardware, is really being adapted to biology as well.
What's an example of a future of food company?
The most probably famous company out of our accelerator is called Memphis Meats. They grow lab-grown meat. So they take a biopsy of stem cells from an organism like pig or a cow or chicken, and they grow that up in the lab. And so instead of growing up a whole animal, you use tissue culture techniques and the way we treat any kind of cells in the lab, we can actually grow that meat. And the reason why we want to do this is because it cuts down carbon footprint, obviously doesn't harm the animals. And we think that this is a viable way to scale meat production in the future as meat demand is increasing all across the world.
Have they made a burger yet?
They have. They've made a meatball, and they have made several different types of prototypes. At the moment, it's still very expensive, so a lot of the technology is around how to make that cheaper to get to mass market production. But they think they can do that in the next couple of years.
That's really exciting. So what's an example of some of the regenerative medicine companies that you're looking at?
Yeah, my favorite company is called Prelis Biologics. They are 3D printing organs. So the idea is in the future, you can take your stem cells and they can grow an entire kidney replacement for you or any other organ. And the way they're doing it, of course, we think of 3D printing as plastic extrusion, layer by layer. The problem with that is that if you graft collagen and then graft cells onto it, the resolution is just not high enough. So this company uses 2-photon lasers, so literally 2 photons, to solidify collagen inside a fish tank like that. So if you imagine a vat of unpolymerized collagen and cells floating around, they then make little structures around the cells to encapsulate them into place. And so they've been able to do demonstrations showing that they can make capillaries, which is the most high-res thing you will need to do in order to build an organ, and they've been successfully able to do that. We're still a long ways from a kidney, but they have started with smaller amounts of organs, and they're kind of building that out with different types of cells. So from the consumer side, we already use a lot of biotech in our daily lives, but for some more specific ones, we have one called Nerd Skincare that's actually a prebiotic for your face to fight acne. So it's a nutrient that feeds the good bacteria, and then the good bacteria naturally suppresses the bad bacteria. So that's really neat and a very different way of curing acne when normally it's usually harsh chemicals or acids. There are things like Microworks that are growing leather from mushrooms. And so they're able to grow an entire cow's hide of leather in 2 weeks instead of growing up a whole cow that takes 2 years and, of course, a lot of environmental resources. You know, industrial side as well, we have a company called Lingrove that is making wood without trees. So 90% of the high-end wood in the world have actually been deforested already. And so we can't really have nice wood-like textures in the future because all these quality woods have been used. So what they do is they actually take flax and the stem of the flax and mix that with a resin and make this beautiful, moldable kind of plastic-type material that looks like wood, and it's absolutely beautiful, and it's also much harder than wood. So this is actually a performance product that both has the look and the feel. And then, of course, we have more traditional kind of medical devices and therapeutics companies as well, but usually they have a very different angle as compared to what other big pharmaceutical companies are doing. So from, like, medical devices, we have a company that's doing a wearable kidney. They're called Kidney Labs. Spelled Q-I-D-N-I. And so the wearable kidney device would allow people to not have to be hooked up to dialysis. Another company is looking at blood markers to diagnose autism, which right now autism is still diagnosed via behavioral tests around age 4. And they're hoping that with this blood test, they can diagnose much earlier and potentially even prenatally so that there can be interventions done. And from the therapeutic side, you know, we're really interested in gene therapy and how that might affect the future of humanity. But there's a lot of challenges with gene therapy right now. If you just inject DNA, especially even if it's packaged, it doesn't necessarily go to the right place. And it also oftentimes it causes immune responses. So we have companies that are working on those kinds of technologies to make gene therapy viable.
Right. Gene therapy is incredibly complex and could have some very bad consequences. I want to shift gears a bit to Theranos, the biotech unicorn startup that claimed it could run a whole host of tests with just a drop of blood, but ended up being a total fraud and costing investors hundreds of millions of dollars. Are you seeing any pushback in the industry at all?
I think it's definitely been a big warning sign, and people are, you know, dissecting it and understanding what went wrong, and people are looking at companies a little more closely, definitely taking a little bit more of the science approach and really trying to understand science for companies. I feel like it definitely is an anecdotal thing that people talk about in the Bay Area, and our companies even talk about it, but it's more of what not to do. And I don't think, while investors are more cautious a little bit around these warning signs, I think the investment of going into biotech is still going up, because we all see that this is a really great technology. We are just at that cusp where we can start to engineer with biology, instead of biology previously has essentially been a science where you are digging in and understanding the nature of biology. We're just at that position where we can start read, write, copy, cut, and paste DNA effectively, that we can start engineering. So with all the timing, I think biotech is still going up and will be going up for quite a while. But Theranos did give some warning signs and say, hey, let's get back. Let's make sure things are going properly, things are real, that things are grounded in science. So I think it's in some ways made the industry stronger, because there's a higher level of quality and a higher bar that people have to pay attention to.
That makes a lot of sense. What are some overarching trends you're seeing in biotech?
Yeah, I think some of the big trends I think we're seeing in biotech is really trying to diversify biology from something that's human health into understanding planetary health too. So all the food and agriculture innovations and areas that we're also really interested in is carbon capture. Can we do something with oceans? Can we replace plastics? All these big systems that need to be shaken up, and there's tons of problems out there that biology can really try to address. So that's really exciting. And also seeing the convergence of different fields. We see a lot more AI and machine learning going into biology to try to solve problems. We see a lot of different new types of therapeutics that are not kind of your traditional small molecules being now, and those things are starting to have positive results. So it's a really exciting time. It's going to be a while for these companies to get to the stage where they're producing products. You know, they kind of have 5 to 10 year horizons. But I'm super excited in 5 to 10 years to see what life will be like. With Indie Bio, you know, our mission is to turn scientists into entrepreneurs. And we think that there are so many great scientists doing amazing research. And now is also the time to bring that research out of the lab and into the world to address real world problems. Most scientists, their careers are wrapped around publishing a paper. And then afterwards, they might want to do something more with it, but they don't know how to. So that's what Indie Bio is here for. We try to bring in those scientists who really want to see their product and see their science affect humanity. And we bring them in and we try to, you know, teach them how to do entrepreneurship and how to get to the next level with their companies. And I think that will be absolutely amazing for all mankind, because we are seeing now that our technology that we make is creating selective pressure against our species, and we're actually almost essentially changing our genomes in ways and into the future. And so it is extremely impactful and it is extremely needed in our society to really think consciously about what kinds of technologies we want to build, what kind of solutions we want to provide, and even create new technologies and benefit all of humanity.
My guest this week is Dr. June Axup, Scientific Director and Partner at IndieBio, who are helping scientists bring their research out of the lab and into products. We're in the age of biology. We can sequence a human genome in under a day for under $1,000, where less than 20 years ago, it took 13 years and $1 billion. Now we're able to leverage technologies like CRISPR to edit DNA, 3D printing organs, lab-grown meat, geoengineering to fight climate change, or create new, more sustainable materials, to name just a few. During the internet revolution, we have seen that technology can have unintended consequences, especially when operating on large-scale systems. There is an imperative for those creating technology and biotech to think through potential future implications. I followed up with June about ethics, and at IndieBio, they talked to their companies about leaning into ethics and regulation rather than running away from it. Most of the companies talked to regulatory bodies during the program to understand their path to market and potential issues that could arise. Of course, it was never predicted that the ARPANET, initially a way for scientists to communicate with one another, would become something we use every day. As George Church, who developed methods used for the first genome sequence, among many other things, said, "The rewards for biotechnology are tremendous. To solve disease, eliminate poverty, age gracefully." It sounds so much cooler than Facebook. I'm looking forward to our biology-driven future and excited to see what it has in store. That's it for this week's edition of Digital Culture. I'm Brittany Gallagher. You can find out more on our website at digitalculture.la. Follow us on Twitter at DigCultureLA or follow me on Twitter at In a Quantum World.